Mr. Chairman and friends, what is it that as individuals we need more than anything else in life? That is to say, once such basic needs as food, clothing, shelter, and leisure have been met, have been satisfied, we need freedom. Freedom. And it's not difficult, I think, to see why this is so. The real meaning of human life, as I think we've gathered by this time, the real meaning of human life is to be found in growth, in development. Development, that is to say, of self-awareness, of emotional positivity, of responsibility for oneself and for others, and also development of creativity. In other words, it consists in the development of all our more distinctively human qualities and characteristics. It means, we may say, the development of, or development into, higher and ever higher levels of being and consciousness. But we cannot grow unless we have the space in which to grow, both literally and also metaphorically. We cannot develop unless we have room in which to develop. In a word, we need freedom. We need freedom from all that restricts and confines us, not only outsiders, but also even insiders. We need freedom from our own conditioning, need even freedom from our own old self. Now, what is it that helps us, or is usually considered to help us, to be free, to become free, apart, that is to say, from our own personal efforts? What helps us to become free, what is considered at least to help us to become free, is what is usually called, not a very satisfactory term admittedly, as we shall see later on, what is usually called religion. Religion is concerned with freedom, concerned with the freedom of the individual, concerned with the freedom of the individual to grow, to develop. And in the course of our first talk, as I think most of you remember, we saw that an alternative title of our sutra, the Vimalakirti Nirdesha, was the Achintya Vimoksha, or the inconceivable emancipation, which we could also translate as liberation or freedom. We saw, in fact, in the course of that first talk, that vimoksha, emancipation, liberation, freedom, was one of a group of terms that was very important in and for early Buddhism, very prominent in and for early Buddhism. We saw, again, just briefly reminding you, we saw that in addition to vimoksha or vimokha, which is the Pali form of the word, we have terms like mutti and vimutti, as well as mokha. And they've all got the same general sense. That is to say, they all signify, they all connote emancipation, liberation, freedom. And we further saw that this sort of experience, the experience of spiritual emancipation, is very, very important for early Buddhism. In fact, we saw that it's what the Buddha's teaching is really all about. We saw that in a well-known passage, the Buddha himself says, just as the great ocean has one taste, the taste of salt, so my teaching has one taste, one flavor, the taste, the flavor of emancipation, vimutti. So the goal of the spiritual life is envisaged in early Buddhism, in fact in Buddhism generally, in terms of emancipation. Emancipation from craving, from hatred, from delusion. Emancipation from everything that conditions and confines and distorts our own deeper sources of creativity, our own creative impulse. It's the emancipation of ourselves, we may say, from all, that prevents us from becoming even Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Emancipation from all that stands in the way of our growth. And in that first talk, in the course of that first talk, I went on to illustrate in some detail the importance of the conception of emancipation in Buddhism. There's no need to recapitulate all that here. It's sufficiently clear that, so far as Buddhism is concerned, religion is what helps us to become free. Now, I've spoken so far only about Buddhism, but if we were to ask the followers of any of the other religions where they stand, where those other religions stand in this respect, they would surely say that they too helped the individual to become free. That is to say, if we ask the followers of what I've called the universal religions. The Christian, if you asked him this sort of question, might quote from the Bible, from the New Testament, might quote the words, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." But now let us ask another question. What is it that hinders us from becoming free, actually becoming free, apart, that is to say, from our own sloth and torpor, laziness, neglect, forgetfulness, and so on? Well, what hinders us from becoming free is religion. So here we encounter a gigantic contradiction. We encounter a gigantic paradox. Religion, which is supposed to help us to become spiritually free, in fact, only too often helps to keep us enslaved. In fact, only too often, religion adds to our existing state of slavery. So much, indeed, is this the case that to quite a lot of people, the idea, the very idea that religion helps us to become free sounds quite absurd, because they just can't associate religion and freedom at all. And for this reason, quite a lot of people feel at least a little uncomfortable using, in a sense being obliged to use, this word religion at all. In fact, I must confess that I sometimes feel a little uncomfortable using it myself. But so far, I haven't succeeded in finding any term to replace it. But I'm working on it. So, why is it that we find it difficult, in fact find it so difficult, to associate religion and freedom? We in the West, that is, I should hasten to add. It's not perhaps so much because of what religion is in principle. It's because of what we find when we look at it as a concrete historical fact, a concrete historical phenomenon, especially when we look back at the record of Christianity over the last 1,900 years. Or perhaps I should be a wee bit generous and say the last 1,600 years. That is, say, back to the time when Christianity was declared the official religion of the Roman Empire. It's fairly obvious that it's not possible for us to develop as individuals unless we are free at least to think for ourselves. But organized Christianity has hardly ever allowed the individual that freedom. Certainly, none of the major churches have ever allowed it. People in the past, in the West, in all Christian lands, had to think as the church thought. They had to toe the theological line, or else. I need hardly remind you that even today, what the church calls blasphemy is still a criminal offence in this country. Not only that, organized Christianity not only refused to allow the individual to think for himself, it obliged him to think in a way that was actually detrimental, actually inimical to his own personal development. It obliged him to think of himself as a miserable sinner, obliged him to think of himself as weak and powerless, obliged him to think of such things as independence and initiative as wrong, if not positively sinful. And again, I hardly need remind you that many of us suffer as individuals from the effect of this sort of teaching. Now, what went wrong? How was it that religion that is meant to help us become free should, in fact, more often than not, do the exact opposite? How is it that religion should help actually to enslave us? It's because it has been forgotten that religion is a means to an end. That end being the development of the individual. Religion has become an end in itself. The forms which religion takes have become ends in themselves. Doctrines have become ends in themselves. Institutions have become ends in themselves. And rules have become ends in themselves. So, what are we to do in a situation of this sort? The individual needs to grow. To be an individual means, in fact, to grow. The individual needs to become free. The individual needs something that will help him grow, help him become free. So, all right, let us agree to call that thing religion. But how are we to make sure that religion does not become the means, or a means, of enslaving the individual, of stultifying the individual, even of crushing the individual? We need something that will constantly remind us of the limitations of religion. We need something that will constantly remind us that religion is only a means to an end. That end being, as I've said, the development of the individual. The individual's means of development from a state of unenlightened to a state of enlightened humanity, from mundane consciousness to transcendental consciousness. In other words, we need what I've called the transcendental critique of religion. And we find such a critique in the Vimala Kirti Nirdesha. We find it in chapters 3 and 4. And in Thurman's translation, these chapters are entitled The Disciple's Reluctance to Visit Vimala Kirti and The Bodhisattva's Reluctance.